We're back, and you're listening to On the Air with Glenn Coble. And today we have a special guest, which we have every last Thursday of the month, James Anderson, the Marion County naturalist. And we were talking about beavers before this, and what was I going to say about that? You were mentioning something about, oh, and then you started talking about spiders, one of my favorite critters. What in the world are we talking about spiders so early for? Aren't they dead?
So no, a lot of them are in a hibernational state. And I was just mentioning, I just learned this actually a few days ago, that when we get a warm-up, so we're talking about above 32 a little bit.
Next week.
Some spiders do come out. Looking for any type of insect that's, you know, out and about, which I know there's not a terribly lot of insects, but I was very surprised. I usually see most spiders usually in about late spring, and then the majority of the spiders in the fall.
Yeah.
But yeah, we do have some species that will come out in the snow.
Are the bad ones come out in the snow, like,
you know,
the brown recluse?
On the leucuses and the widows?
Yeah.
They might in southern Ohio.
Well, they'll be dead if they come out of my house.
For the brown leucus, and I forget what's the other leucus we have, there's not terribly a lot in central Ohio. There have been some reports. I'm not saying there's none.
Yeah.
But most of them are found in southern Ohio.
I think I told you my wife was bitten by what the doctor thought was
a brown leucus.
Really?
Leucus,
wow. Yeah. He said that it looked like it, and she was not... did not feel well for several days, like 3 or 4 days, and it swelled up, and there was just one spot, and it was...
I think it can cause a staph infection.
Really?
If I'm right, yeah.
Well, she's too mean for that. All right, now, I was thinking this morning, when I was thinking about doing the show, do critters have... like humans, do they have laws and rules and enforcement officers to do that? Or is it basically the biggest one is the enforcement officer and you do what he says?
Oh, you mean, okay, in nature. Well,
yeah,
I mean, there's
nature.
Always the old saying, survival of the fittest. I mean, that's the primary motto of nature. But also, it's the ones who are adapted to change.
Okay.
Those are the ones who are going to survive the greatest.
Now, how do they adapt? Just by the ones that don't adapt get eaten?
Well, eaten or destroyed.
Yeah.
When I teach about endangered species to people, you know, one of the slides I talk about, you know, why is one animal considered endangered and why is another one not?
Yeah.
You know, I compare like raccoons and bobcats. When bobcats were at one time were endangered.
Right.
Like we talked about, the adaptable change, because raccoons, you know, can live between a forest, agriculture, downtown Marion. Bobcat, not so much.
Yeah.
Now around Athens, that's a different story because that habitat is more abundant in Athens region than it would in Marion. Also, I talk about, you know, some animals are very, very picky when it comes to food and shelter, and sometimes for reproduction.
Like monarchs can only have their babies on milkweed, right? Yeah.
And there's this little bird, it's called Kirtland's warbler, which we have here in Ohio. It only nests in young jack pine. Well, the only problem is jack pine only releases its seed in intense heat or fire.
Yeah.
Well, when Smokey the Bear came around, don't get me wrong, I love Smokey the Bear. But one of the bad things with Smokey the Bear was we quit having fires. He embedded that idea. And for a long time, even scientists and the general public can say, oh, all fire's bad, all fire's bad. Well, then scientists were starting to realize, you know, not all fires are bad.
Right.
You know, as long as we can maintain and be manageable. Because what happens if we learned about the young jack pine, the sequoias is another example. You know, they only release their seeds under intense heat. So some plants need fire in order to continue their life cycle
for
the next generation.
So it's not always all bad, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, now if you have a fire, wouldn't it burn the seed up, though, as it's released?
It depends on the seed. Some seeds have a very thick coating.
Ah, okay.
And they are basically resilient to fire. Now, when we get those intense fires, like the ones we typically see out west, that's a different story.
Yeah.
Because what happened was, because again, Smokey the Bear and his whole philosophy, we get what's called the Kendall effect. So what happened is we get layer after layer after layer of leaf litter and sticks.
Sure.
And you know what happens when you start a bonfire with a whole bunch of sticks and leaves?
It's a big fire.
Big fire. And that's why we're seeing these large fires out west.
Huh.
It's because of that.
Yeah, I was watching a show last night on Burning Man, which is held in the desert out in Nevada, I believe it is. And everything's put on fire at Burning Man, it seems like. But it's amazing to watch. It gets so hot at some times that you get a tornado of fire.
Yes, yes. It gets so intense.
Yeah. Yikes. That's kind of scary.
Grasslands, I mean, they need fires.
Really?
In order to maintain. Because once fires come through a grassland, it releases a bunch of nitrogen, which a lot of those plants need.
They need nitrogen.
And then the other problem is, too, is if you don't burn a grassland, trees start moving in. Well, then those trees outcrowd the grasses or the wildflowers in that prairie. And so next thing you know, you got a forest instead of prairie.
So up north where they're trying to get the grasslands to continue, it might be taken over by trees?
Yes.
It's
what's a good old thing called succession, ecological succession.
Huh. Well, now what happens to the critters when fire comes through?
So, I mean, there are some that are going to die.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I can't sugarcoat that.
Yeah.
But a lot of times what firefighters will do, or before they do a managed or a prescribed fire, is they have what's called wildlife watch, which means these people go in and basically try
scare
to
scare them out.
And then if they say they find a mice or a foal that, you know, got caught in the fire but still in good condition, they'll relocate it to another area.
Oh, okay. Now, it just brought this to my mind. Weren't you having a bird watch?
Oh, yes, yes.
How did that go?
Bird watch, yeah. Well, first, I want to thank you. We did actually have one couple that came out because they heard your request,
good.
So thank you.
Good.
I got to still plug in the numbers, hopefully in the next couple weeks, but we think we had at least, what was it, about 10 or 12 participants.
Good.
So, as I know, I told you last month, I mean, I know we had it in the 20s in the past, but hopefully next year we'll have more. But, yeah, it was really cool. I was out there from 4 in the morning till 6 in the evening, and walked about, 16 miles between Tallgrass Trail, Killdeer, and Myers Wood. So it was a lot of walking.
Your particular industry, naturalist, must require that you be healthy, I think.
Yeah, you got to do a lot of walking.
Yeah, you do a lot of walking. Okay, so I was going to join that. I have the best intentions, always.
Yeah.
And I was going to tell you the birds that I have in my backyard, and I failed.
That's okay.
But I do have an awful lot of birds that come to my backyard, but like I was telling you, I don't see them so much right now.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe because it was so icy cold lately. But they did eat all the suet.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, why would they're almost more attracted to the suet than they are to the bird seed that I have.
Well, suets are going to provide more nutrition.
Oh.
Because it's basically seed dipped in animal fat.
Yeah.
So that's what's going to keep them going a lot longer than seed.
Yeah, but birds are herbaceous, aren't they?
Well, I mean, yeah, they're herbaceous.
Why would they eat
most
animal
are herbaceous.
Feed
There's some omnivores.
Well, that's right, yeah.
They don't know. I mean, they're after the seed, but the seed's dipped in the fat.
So. Yeah. So the fat really helps them.
Yes.
To some degree.
Yeah, because they burn those calories a lot faster than what you and I were. If we ate a whole suet cake, it'd take a lot.
Sure. How many, have you ever heard how many calories a hummingbird burns up in a minute?
Yes, I used to know that number. It's about close to 100, or maybe a little over 100. But maybe not a minute, but I know within about 10 to 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's amazing to watch them. Now, I bought a new hummingbird feeder. It's glass. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
No hummingbird, in self-respecting hummingbird, will come to it, I'm sure. But I'm going to put it up, and we're going to try to get some. Now, I do have a very small hummingbird. Now, you told me we only have one or two species of
hummingbird.
We have
one species.
One species, so it
now
must be that.
Now, we get visitors, but the rufous, which is a very rare sighting, but the ruby-throat, it's the only one that's.
Now, is it real small when it's young?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the adults are only about maybe 2 inches, so the young are really, really small, maybe so half of an inch.
I've seen the little tiny one out in my front. I have arborvitae or something like that, and the little tiny one I've seen come out of that, and I'm guessing there's maybe a nest in there. Can they make... Do they make nests?
Yeah, they make nests.
What does a hummingbird nest look like?
So
a thimble?
No, it's actually probably about 2 inches wide and about an inch thick. Some hummingbird species actually put a lid on top.
Oh.
Not the ruby-throated in Ohio. Yeah. But they only have about 2 eggs. That's only what they can fit. Sometimes 3, but that's really crowded.
Yeah.
But they use what's called lichens, which is that either green,
moss?
Bluish. It's kind of like moss.
Yeah.
It's on the trees, and they use that for their nesting material. And
they
use spider webs to make the foundation.
Well, I didn't go in and see if I could find it because I didn't want to disrupt anything. But that little bait, I knew it was tiny, and I figured it came out of that, so there must be a nest in there.
Yeah.
It's not going to go around the neighborhood looking for another nest, I don't think. But
so I would recommend, too, help your hummingbirds out other than just the feeders. If you got a orange or an apple or a banana that's going bad, if you can somehow stake it and leave it out there with a little fruit flies or gnats or whatever, or sometimes small bees and wasps. Hummingbirds need proteins, and that's actually, they do eat small insects.
Yeah, how do I tell my squirrels not to eat that apple?
Unfortunately, you can't do it. The only thing you could try, you probably could do that.
A shotgun might work.
Well, shotgun, what we talked about before, Tabasco sauce and all.
Oh, that's
right.
You
put that on the actual banana and apple, because remember, the hummingbird's not after the fruits, after the gnats and the bugs.
Oh, okay.
They're hanging around the fruit.
Yeah.
That's what they want.
Maybe I could bring them in my basement because I grow lettuce in my basement.
Oh, yeah.
And I grow spinach and I grow kale. What else do I have growing down there? Parsley. I have quite a few little fruit flies or whatever they are flitting about down there. Now, will they hurt my... plants or...
Oh, the hummingbirds?
No, the flies.
The flies, they may try to eat some or lay their eggs on your food. So.
Oh, well, more protein for me.
Yeah.
It's really fun to do, and I highly recommend to my listeners to put a grow light, and they're not very expensive anymore. Put a grow light in your basement and grow, I bought a thing of seeds for 20 cents at a local big box store, and I just threw the seeds in there and it just grew and grew, and I eat those every night. Now I'm out now, so I've started again, and I did notice yesterday morning I have little tiny leaves of lettuce popping up. So hey, and I've while I'm talking about that, I found that, and I'm going to give a recommendation, which I don't usually do, and they didn't pay me for this, but Dollar Tree has an awful lot of things for us gardeners, but I've gone to 3 different Dollar Trees, and each one of them has a little bit different selection. But I bought, what did I buy at the last one? I bought seed starting dirt. What do they call it?
Your topsoil.
Well, it's not really topsoil.
Or your potting soil.
Potting soil. Yeah, and I bought also a stacking pots so that I can grow strawberries off of it, and I've bought decoration things, and I bought big pots, all of them for $1.
Nice.
You can't buy a pot for $1. Even if you go to a garage sale, they're going to charge you more than that. So anyway, I know it's shameless to go ahead and make that recommendation, but that's where I went. And the people here at the $2 trees in town are very friendly, and I highly recommend stopping there. Anyway, okay, let's get back to the critters. Now, I was asking about, are there... how do ants know that they're supposed to go and get that leaf and all line up in a row and take it to their house?
Their colony.
Yeah. How do they know that sort of thing? Do they have rules that when they're born? Okay, learn this. You got to get the leaf and take it behind the guy sitting next to you.
Well, the big thing is instincts.
It is instincts.
Instincts. Well, of course, and I think this is for ants too. Well, like for honeybees, you know, only the females are the workers. And I think for ants, it's the same thing too. And then the males, their only job is to breed with the queen, and they don't do much.
Yeah.
And also too, for the workers, they also have to take care of the new generation that's coming about with the queen lays.
Now, aren't there like bees that do nothing but guard the place? They don't even reproduce.
And that's
or
the thing about the workers with the females. There's all those different jobs: either caring for the young, gathering pollen, or guarding the nest.
And they know that all by instinct.
All by instinct. Now, for ants, yes, there are actual guard ants, and those are typically are the males, because they're a lot larger mandibles.
Yeah. I've seen them. They sit on top of the little mound, and they stare at you if you come close.
Yes.
Not too long, if you get real close.
But the whole, like, uniform line thing, I think it's just to help intimidate predators, because the more they're closer together, they look like a single organism.
Yeah, and they look like a snake, maybe.
Yeah, like a snake, and a predator might say, well, I don't know if I want to mess with that.
Yeah.
But if they're all scattered around, I'm like, oh, well, that looks easy. Well,
yeah,
looks
I'll like eat that one.
Yeah.
Now, colors also keep predators away, right?
Yes.
Like, isn't that why the monarch and the viceroy look a lot alike? Because it kind of scares away predators?
Yes. So the typical rule is the brighter you are, it usually says
poison,
you're
right?
Poisonous,
yeah.
or feminist, or some type of threat. Now, what's funny about the viceroy, that it's not toxic.
Right.
So because it does not eat
but the monarch
milk,
is,
the monarch,
right?
Is,
yeah.
Because it mimics the monarch.
Yeah.
And then, if a predator was to mess with a monarch and learn its lesson, well, no more monarchs, and sees a viceroy, well, I don't want to eat that monarch.
Why make a mistake? It's like me with mushrooms. I'm not going to go out and pick up mushrooms in the forest, because there might be some mimicking ones going on.
Yes, there's a lot of lookalikes of edibles and toxics.
Now, if you want to pick up, and this is something that always bothers me about, I love animals. I really do truly love animals, but I'm frightened of many of them. How do you pick up a butterfly without hurting it?
Without hurting it? Like for the monarch tagging, what you do is you just gently fold their wings and then just gently hold them.
Okay, so you hold their wings together so they can't flutter.
Yeah, because the more they flutter, then the more they can damage their wings.
And that doesn't hurt them. The oil in your skin doesn't hurt their wings.
For the butterflies, I mean, you want to just kind of keep your fingers as still as you can. I mean, yes, you can dust off a lot of their stuff on them. And I guess if you were to rub, then yes, that could hurt them. But as long as you keep your fingers still, then no, it doesn't.
If you find a little bird that's fallen out of a nest, how do you take care of that?
So typically, a lot of times, mom and dad will take care of them.
Really? So leave it alone?
Leave it alone.
Keep an eye on it.
Yeah.
If mom and dad don't show up, maybe what do you do then?
So if you absolutely don't see parents by, then you would have to call a wildlife rehabilitator. Around here would be Crow's Hollow and Richwood, or if you're wanting to travel to the Mansfield up at the Ohio Bird Sanctuary, or down at the Ohio Wildlife Center down by Dayton.
So can they save little birds that have fallen out of a nest?
Typically, yes.
What do they feed them?
So for them, sometimes they do mash up insects or worms and then put it through a syringe, or sometimes they do make a little mixture of, it's not really milk, but it's kind of a milky substance, and basically help to gain fat.
Huh. My wife and I watch Death in Paradise. It's a British show, and there is a lizard on it. His name is Harry, and he's very close friends with, he's supposedly a real lizard, so he's not real, but he's friendly with the detective, who's the main guy. Now, I found out last week that he is completely computer animated. He is not real.
CGI.
They have to supposedly feed him mangoes with crushed up insects in it. So anyway, I don't know why I brought that. I guess because you were talking about crushing up insects. where was I going with all of this? Well, I think that I like mammals, bigger animals. If you find one that's injured, how should you... Should you be afraid of them that they might bite you because they're injured? Or well, how mean, do you handle something like that?
I mean, there's always a chance if you're trying to help out wildlife, yes, you may get hurt. Because that animal doesn't know you're there to save it.
Right.
It thinks you're a predator.
Yeah.
And they think it's going to be eaten by you, even though you're not going to.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's always a chance, I mean, they're going to bite or kick or whatever the case may be.
You
so,
can't hold a sign up that says, I'm not a predator.
Yeah, yeah. Can't do that. So, a lot of times, for most animals, what they'll have to do is they get a towel and they cover their face.
Oh, yeah.
And it just kind of calms them down.
Okay. No, don't put them in a shoebox.
You can. Like, for birds, especially if it's a small songbird, if you are going to take it to a rehab facility, what they usually recommend is put it in some type of little enclosure, then keep it in a dark, quiet room.
Oh, yeah,
so
sure.
You're going to take it into the facility.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Now, we had a bat get into our house down in Athens more than once. But the bat got into the house. And I put on my foul weather gear from when I used to race sailboats, which is completely covers my entire body with waterproof stuff. I put on a hat. I put on a mask. I put on gloves. I was terrified.
You remind me of that scene from The Great Outdoors. You ever watch John Candy and Dan McCroy?
Yeah. Well, that's the way I am. And I had a tennis racket. I think that they have a tennis racket. And I thought, well, if he comes at me, I'm going to get him. But I did. I was lucky enough. He was on the wall, and I put the shoebox over him, and I got him.
Good. Good.
But then how do I cover up the shoebox without him flying out?
Skill.
It didn't work.
Oh.
He flew out. But then I was lucky enough that I did get him on the ground, and I did cover him again with the shoebox and found a flat piece of paper or cardboard to put under it, and we got him out of the house. But what would you recommend to people that get bats in their house? Because they go everywhere.
They do. You know, they're just trying to get out.
Yeah, I know they are. Yeah.
What I always tell people, if you have a bat in your house, especially in your living quarters, instead of your attic or what I tell people is open up every window, every door, just everything.
They want to get out. Yeah.
And then if you're still having trouble, what I'd say is start corralling them. So if you have a large window or a large door, say in your living room.
Hold up a blanket
or
something.
Get a blanket.
Yeah.
Yeah, and have somebody help you and start pushing slowly until that window
good
or door.
Good idea, yeah.
So,
don't use the racket on them.
No.
No. Now, I did think I did tell you I had a bat hit me in the head when I was up on Mackinac Island.
Oh, boy.
But it was because I was drunk from getting off of a sailboat after 5 days on the Chicago to Mackinac race. And I wasn't drunk, but you have sea legs, and you kind of wobble a little bit for a while. And I wobbled when he wobbled, and he kind of brushed my hair.
Oh.
And I have told people for years, that proves that they attack your hair. It doesn't.
No.
He just brushed me. Oh, me. Now, hawks will attack you, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
And we talked about that last time, where that hawk came at me out there in the woods.
Yep.
And I was happy to hear he attacked somebody else, because that meant I wasn't a liar.
He did, and yeah, he really got that guy.
Yeah.
And he showed me pictures. He really tore up his eye.
Now, see, I didn't. I was lucky enough that I ducked, and all he did was flap his wings on me.
Yeah.
So be careful. They're just doing it. They're not trying to hurt you.
No.
Well, yes, they are, but they're just trying to get you away.
It was during her nesting season.
Yeah.
And that was the thing. And, you know, when you're walking by and you don't know that her nest is near, but she's just a mom. She's just trying to protect her babies.
Yeah. Just like my wife tried to protect her babies.
Yeah.
And her babies now are trying to protect their babies. So,
the whole mama bear.
Oh, yeah. I tell you what. I have a daughter who lives out in North Carolina. And she has I've talked about my eldest grandson who's going to play baseball for North Carolina. But he's also 6'5", so he plays basketball for his high school. And Boy, I tell you what, those mama instincts are something else. If a referee calls a bad call, or even a good call that she thinks is bad, she'll attack him. So, anyway, that's part of my family lore that I'm embarrassed about. Where was I going with that? I don't know. Oh, well. What is the next... We're almost, what are we, 9 weeks away, 8 weeks away from spring. Now, what will the next steps out of the tall grass trail be? What will we start to see change out there?
Well, breeding season's about to start for a lot of our animals. Right now, our beavers, we've been talking about, it's their breeding season. Bald eagles right now is their breeding season.
Oh, yeah.
Cardinals are going to be starting here soon, so when you come out to the Tallgrass Trail, you can see them very, very active, and then you hear that beautiful song with the males make, that pretty, 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 or pretty, pretty, pretty girl.
Yeah. Hey, we've got a phone call, and I keep forgetting to tell people what our phone number is. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah. My question is, you know, in Ohio, we're pretty fortunate that most of wildlife is really not harmful to human beings, but
yes.
In Ohio, what would be, you know, one or two top ones that a person would have to worry about if they're out in the wild, in the woods, or in the water? Or...
Definitely, I mean, there's always the chance with coyotes. I mean, there's been some attacks in Ohio, and I've done coyote programs before, but for some odd reason, there's a lot of reports out in California, so I would say they must like California.
I've heard that,
But then, of course, you mean there's always your chance of your feminist snake species, but that's usually the case when people are getting too relatively close, or sometimes there's a case you might be hiking by and you don't know that they're there. We're here in Marion County, especially in the northern part of the county, up by Morrill, would be the Masaga, or the pygmy rattlesnake,
but
if you go in more southeastern Ohio, would be the copperhead or the timber rattlesnake.
Now, are there mammals that might attack you?
Yeah, the coyote.
Coyote.
Again, northeastern, southeastern Ohio, black bears, there's always a chance of black bear attacks.
The beavers and things like that won't bother you, will it?
Well, like we were talking about the whole mama nest situation, sometimes during that time, yes, they want you away.
Does that give you an answer?
Yeah, we're pretty fortunate around here.
Yes, we are very, very fortunate.
Yeah. You know, a kid can go out. I know when we was younger, you know, we was out in the woods and stuff all the time, you know, and you know, there's really not a whole lot of wildlife that's going to injure you.
Yeah, right. Maybe a bee.
But, you know, most of them will run from you.
Yeah.
The old saying, "He's more afraid of you than you are of him." It doesn't apply in my case, but in many cases it does.
I remember years ago I had some traps set, and I caught an owl in a trap.
An owl?
Yeah. And I was going to shoot it. And my younger brother, "Oh, you ain't going to shoot it, are you?" He said, "Let's take it out." I said, "Okay, go ahead."
Did he bite him?
So he starts walking up to it, and he gets, you know, fairly close to it, and the owl lunges at him. And,
oh, yeah.
"Shoot it!"
We're going to just end this story by saying you were gracious and you let him out and he flew away.
Yeah, I wish I could have. But I wasn't going to take no chances, you know, trying to get out of there.
I understand. You don't want to get anybody injured, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well,
okay, thanks.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye. there's a definite... fine line that we walk when we're trying to protect ourselves from critters that we love, but you know, they're terrified of you and they'll bite you if they have to. And I keep forgetting to tell people what our phone number is. I'm sorry, James. 740-383-9944. The gentleman that just called is a regular caller, so he knows what our phone number is. 740-383-9944. And James is here to answer any of your questions. Now, the squealing you heard was my fault. I'm sorry, everybody. Okay. But, yeah, we forget about bees and hornets. Now, I'm not afraid of bees for some reason or other. Now, I don't want to put one in my hand, but they don't, you know, there are people that, oh my gosh, there's a bee, and they'll run forever. I don't run away from bees. I'm not real fond of hornets, however.
They're a little bit more aggressive.
Yeah.
Hornets and wasps are. Usually bees are a little more docile, as long as you don't disturb them.
Yeah, leave them alone. And my father used to tell me, if you leave critters alone, they'll leave you alone. And that's pretty much a truism. Not always, though.
Yeah, like yellow jackets. That's always fun. During the fall when you're just trying to enjoy a meal and they're just swarming
you.
Yeah, now,
do yellow jackets attack you for a reason? Or are they just trying to...
They're just trying to get the food. Yeah. They don't really want to attack you. But, I mean, of course, I think they kind of take advantage that they know they're armed.
Yeah.
And they know that if they all congregate together, then you'll drop your food and you'll run away or leave the area and
now,
get a free meal.
Now, bumblebees, the big ones, big furry ones, there are all sorts of rumors about it. Do they die after they sting you?
So for bees, for most bee species, yes. So they have a straight stinger.
Okay.
And so when they sting, they basically actually pull out a lot of their internal organs and things that need them to survive. Now wasps and hornets and yellow jackets, all they have a hooked stinger, so they can sting you multiple times.
Oh.
And it doesn't pull out unless you were to angle it right.
Now, is it only bumblebees that have the straight stinger?
No, most of our bee species.
Most bees.
And like honeybees, they have that's why it's their last defense.
Okay, all right.
That's why, yeah.
So they'll leave you alone leave them alone.
Yeah, because they don't want to use it as their first defense, because obviously they'll die from it.
Yeah.
Well, that's like skunks, you know, it just kind of goes for the same thing with their spray. The first thing they'll do is they'll puff up, they'll lift up that tail, they'll try to warn you. But then at the last minute, they'll spray because it takes about 2 weeks to replenish that spray.
And that's their only defense.
And that's their main defense. Yeah. So once, if they were to spray you, run away, well, they're vulnerable for those 2 weeks against coyotes and owls and dogs and other predators.
Now, owls and dogs, excuse me while we have a police car go by, owls and dogs don't know that they've sprayed, though. So they probably leave them alone anyway.
Well, not owls. Especially great hornets.
They'll eat anything.
They'll eat them. That's their favorite foods, actually, are skunks.
And they aren't affected by the spray, are they?
Well, if they get in their eyes, it will burn a little bit, but they smell-wise, no. Owls and most birds do not have a sense of smell.
Yeah, now you told me if I smell a skunk, it might be an owl that's been sprayed that flew by.
Yep. Could be. Not always, but
yeah,
could be.
Yeah, I understand that. And we do have skunks in my neighborhood. I've seen them from a distance, thank goodness. Yeah. I've lost where I was going. This is one of those days for me.
Do we want to go ahead? We have about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
About the programs?
The programs. Yeah, please.
Right.
Let's go into
that
the programs.
Good.
Now, James has all sorts of programs that go on all year long, and he's going to tell us what's going on now out at the Tallgrass Trail and the other parks, I assume.
Yes. Well, for this time of year, for winter, we typically just do it at Tallgrass because it's easier getting into. But
sure.
Then in spring and summer and fall, we do it at the other parks as well.
Shoot it to us.
All right. So on the 3rd, we're having a spectacular carnival program at Tallgrass Trail, the trailhead. That'll start at 4 o'clock p.m. So we're going to learn about this beautiful bird, and we will actually go out and try to find them. As we mentioned before, is their breeding season.
Well, just bring them to my house. I've got them.
So they could be very active on the trail.
Okay.
On the 12th, we're having our Sweetheart Hike, which is part of our winter hike series. On January 8th, we had our polar hike. We had 15 people that came out.
Fantastic.
So this is our second one. This is from 1 to 4 p.m. And the guided nature tour, if you would like it with me, that starts at 1:30 p.m. There at the trailhead. And remember, this is a come-as-you-go hike. So if you only want to walk down for a little bit and come back, that's totally up to you.
Okay,
so,
cool.
Again, that'll be on the 12th. On the 17th, we're actually doing an owl prowl at the trail starting at 5:30 p.m. That'll be at the Tallgrass Trail trailhead. So we'll talk about our owls of Ohio.
Let me stop you for a moment. We got a phone caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Glenn. How you doing today?
Good. Good. Hey, Fred.
Hank still with you?
Yeah.
I had the radio on earlier this morning, and I had to leave, and when I came back, I forgot to turn it back on. But
oh, no.
I had a question for James.
Sure. Shoot.
James, I used to have a friend. He was a police chief up in Sycamore, my best buddy, and we used to go hunting and fishing and all that kind of good stuff together. And one of the things that I did with him that he was very proficient at was hunting snapping turtles.
Oh.
And he never set lines. He always waited for them and felt for them, and I carried the bag. That's the way I'm never going to stick my hand in one of those.
I'm not doing it, yeah.
But I always told him, I said, it'd be my luck if I did that. It would have been one that would have backed in instead of going in first, you know.
Yeah.
But my question for you is, what do snapping turtles do in the winter? Do they hibernate, or what happens to them?
Yes, so they hibernate. Sometimes they hibernate on the edge of a pond or lake or wetland, or sometimes underneath at the bottom of that pond or wetland. Mm-hmm. And they actually have special folds in their skins that actually helps absorb the dissolved oxygen around their area. And they also, when I tell kids, not just snapping turtles, but a lot of our turtles that hibernate in water, they breathe through their butts or their cloacas. Of course, I always love that.
I do that, too.
So those holes that they crawl into, that Bill used to reach in and pull them out from, that's the same hole that they would basically go in and stay in for the winter.
Then. Sometimes, yes, and sometimes it'll just be right at the bottom of that pond or wetland.
Really?
Huh. I'll be darned.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
That I never knew. I have to tell you, over the years, we caught a lot of turtle that way. Like I said, he never set turtle lines. He always felt for them, you know, ditches, the Sandusky River, Sycamore Creek, places like that. And the biggest one I ever saw him pull out when I was with him was a 50-pounder.
Wow. Ooh, that's pretty big.
That is pretty good.
That was a huge snapping turtle, and he was so proficient at cleaning them. He did a wonderful job.
Yeah.
In fact, once a year we would do what we call a big turtle feed, and we did it for all the law enforcement people up in Wyandotte County, Seneca, and I even think Marion County guys came too. But we fixed turtle soup, which was always popular.
Yes, I love turtles.
And then he had one dish that he fixed. It was called, he called it peekaboo turtle. And he would clean the turtles and fry the meat up, kind of brown the meat. And then he had one of those big big roasting pans, you know, those blue ones that you used to use a lot, people use a lot. Okay. And he would put a bed of rice on the bottom, and then the turkey meat with the gravy that he made, and another layer of rice on top, and bake that. And you want to talk about something that was absolutely delicious.
I'm getting that
way.
That
sounds good.
Absolutely fantastic. And, of course, every once in a while, we would smoke some turkey meat or some turtle meat, too.
Huh. They said there's seven different kinds of meat on a snapping turtle.
He smoked everything. We would even smoke catfish that we caught up in Mud Creek up off of Lake Erie, the fish that no one likes out of Lake Erie that you get, we would do those. And he was just an all-around outdoorsman. What a great guy. I surely miss him a lot. But those snapping turtles always fascinated me, because if you weren't careful, and in fact, one of them grabbed one of his son's fingers one time. I thought he was never going to let
me. Yikes.
Yeah. But just wondered what they did in the wintertime. I knew we never went in the winter, so I knew there must have been
a nap.
Yeah.
All right.
And you guys have a great day.
Thanks a lot, Fred. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. All right. What else have we got that we've got to get to in the programs? I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. The February 17th, we're doing an owl prowl program at the trail.
What program?
Owl prowl. So we're going to go
owl prowl.
Yeah, owl prowl. Though.
Nice choice of language.
Well, I'll admit, a lot of parks, districts, or what use that.
Oh, okay.
That title. It's always fun to say. But what we'll be doing is we'll talk about owls of Ohio, and then we will go out and try to find them. As we mentioned before, this is a lot of their breeding season, so they could be very vocal. Not again, guaranteed we'll hear one, but we could.
I was going to say, you probably hear them before you see them. Right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And then on the 21st, we're having a morning bird watching program at the Tallgrass Trail, starting at the trailhead. That'll be at 8:00 in the morning, and then we'll be back here with you on the 24th.
What do you when you go bird watching? Is there an organization? I mean, are you looking for a specific type of bird?
No, we're just out there.
Okay.
I mean, we're always curious of any special friends that are out there that are supposed to not be out there.
Yeah.
Sometimes we'll see some rarities, but every once in a while we like looking at what's out there.
Yeah. Now,
even like a bald eagle, even though yes, they are common, but they're still fun to look at.
It wasn't common when you took me out and we saw one. Yeah. He stared at me like he wanted to have me for lunch, but. Now, do you go on all of these walks, or most of them?
Well, yeah, I lead them.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have other people that lead them. It's always you.
I had one person that did because I had some conflicts going on. Amy Holloway, she's one of our local photographers here in Marion County. So that was one time. And then, of course, when we get an intern, sometimes our interns have led hikes, so.
Well, the reason why I ask is because, you know, everybody wants to know a celebrity, and you have become
a
Marion celebrity, so you can, he'll probably give you an autograph if you ask real nicely.
Maybe.
Well, do you get a decent number of people during this cold time?
Typically, no.
Yeah, I would think that, especially when it's below zero.
Yeah.
And we've had below zero.
Now, for the winter hikes, it seems to draw in a crowd.
Does it? Do you have any photographic hikes where you take people out just to shoot pictures? Or?
Yeah, I've never done that, but that is something I could consider doing in the future.
Yeah, that would be
a photo hike.
Are there any blinds out on the Tallgrass Trail where people can? It might be neat to have a blind where people can hide and take pictures, because there are all sorts of birds that you get out there.
All
you get swan, you get ducks, eagles, goose. What else do you get?
I mean, all kinds of songbirds.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, all kinds of things.
Yeah, that would be kind of fun to have a blind out there. Not for shooting them, though.
Yeah.
Don't go out there and shoot them. It's against the law, isn't it?
Depend on what animal or what bird you're talking about. Now, of course, there are game birds or waterfowl, pheasants, turkey.
But you don't allow hunting on your property, right?
No.
Yeah.
In the case where you're out by 203, you're allowed to travel across, but you can't hunt on or through the trail.
That's the number of that road that's out there that right next to the lake is 203?
Past it. West of it is State Route 203.
Oh, okay.
Past her road.
Oh, her road is the one I'm thinking
of.
Yeah.
Her road is the one adjacent to the lake, and then right after her road, that's State Route 203.
Do you still have the people that fly their airplanes out there?
Yes, yep. Okay.
And when is that?
It's open year-round. They typically, this time of year, they don't.
Yeah.
Typically usually about April, May. Yeah. And they usually last until about November.
You ask people not to walk around there, right?
Yeah, flying their planes, they have a chain across around the lake to not walk around.
Now, can people park out there? I mean, I have parked out there. I hope I didn't do anything.
Yeah, you can park there. It's just you'll see the chain across when they're flying. You just can't go that way.
Okay.
So you'll just have to go the other way.
And do look both ways, because her road is a little bit busy.
It is.
When you go on the Tallgrass Trail, I've seen people just walk right out onto it and thinking, oh, my goodness, if there was a car coming, they'd be dead. But anyway.
It's a very narrow road.
Yeah, it's pretty narrow, and pretty well paved, so they go pretty fast.
Yes.
Yeah. And then if you go about a quarter mile on the other side of her road, you can see a coyote scat.
That's right.
That's where you and I saw
it. Yep. And then that tall red and white tower, that's where the ospreys nest in the summer.
Is that right?
Yes.
Now that's what, maybe a half mile down there?
I would say, at least from the parking lot.
Yeah, from the parking lot area. Yeah.
And then, of course, the ospreys fly to the lake and try to find food. So.
Yeah. Well, that's what we do,
yep.
Right? Okay, we're down to our last 2-3 minutes. Is there anything you're thinking about for the next show that we're going to do? Or you haven't gotten there?
I haven't gotten there yet.
During the winter, what do you wear when you go out on these hikes?
So I always have to wear my uniform, but then if it's like really cold like today, I put on a thicker coat. They're usually two thick coats. So I'm allowed to do that. So, but then once it warms up, I do have another jacket that says the Marion County Park District.
What would you suggest people that are coming out to do a hike with you? What should they wear?
Prepare.
Boots?
Yeah, boots, especially right now, wearing boots, you know, multiple layers, a hat, gloves, just all the essentials.
Okay, now, have you cleaned the paved area of the Tallgrass Trail? Have you cleaned that?
No.
Snow? So you better have boots on.
Yes. I was just out there yesterday, and we do have a little bit of snow on the trail.
Yeah.
And the parking lot.
Probably it snowed a couple inches the last time it snowed. So. My neighborhood is dangerous because a lot of people clean the snow off, but it was after people walked on it, so you have those little patches real slippery ice, so you have to be careful. My puppy dog keeps me from falling down, though. So. Okay, let's see, what time? Oh, my goodness, we only have one more minute. Well, hey, James, thank you so much for coming in today and bringing your buddy the beaver in with you.
Yeah.
The deceased buddy, and we'll try to do this again in a month, and I really appreciate you doing all this, and I notice that you do, you're very active, aren't you? We have a lot of shows going on.
We do. We try to keep busy. I know winters are usually our slow season, but we try to do, and not just our programs. I try to get into the nursing homes, after school
schools,
programs,
yeah.
schools. Yeah. So some schools have been accepting, some, of course some haven't because of everything going on.
Of course, yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much again. And hey, everybody, make sure that you tune in the last Thursday of every month. James is on, and we will try to give you more knowledge about critters, fauna, all that stuff, and maybe James will try to scare me again with another snake. I hope not. All right, thanks a lot for coming in, James, and everybody have a good time.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM LP Marion, Ohio, the place for all the big events. For Scott Spears and Terry Tackett at the 2016 World Series in Cleveland, Ohio, as the Cleveland Indians face the Chicago Cubs.
Now, how is this all going to end up? How many games are we going to play in this series?
I want to say six games. We gonna take it in six.
Four to six. So what do you think will happen when the Indians go to Wrigley? Because you know that city also is waiting for a World Series.
Yes, they is, you know, but I believe in the city. I believe in the tribe. The president is taking 300 of the employees over to Wrigley Field, and I believe that we're going to have one or two wins coming out of there.
It is an amazing night here, and it's great time. And tonight, to win the opener, does that give them momentum, in your opinion?
Yes, I do. I believe it. I mean, they've been waiting for this all season. Cleveland Indians was counted out. They didn't believe in us, but we in Cleveland, and the time is now.
And here we are in Cleveland. It's probably 39 degrees. The winds are out of the northwest coming off the lake. The lake would be... the Great Lake. Yeah, Larry. Something happened. We're getting some feedback here. A play has been played. I had my back to it. What was that?
It was a double down the right field line for Jose Ramirez.
The cold is coming off the lake. Ramirez is doing well, and as near as I can tell, we want